There are as many stories about selling on eBay as there are sellers, and some of those stories are, well, to say the least, quite interesting. This week, we'll meet one of those sellers who has had an interesting 20-plus year run on eBay, including a day job before he started his current business, and it's a job that I don't think most of us would have ever considered. I'm Griff, and this is the eBay for Business podcast, your weekly source for the information and inspiration you need to start, run, and grow a business on the world's most powerful marketplace. And I'm back, and we're back. It's been a fun 2 weeks. It's been a fun 6 weeks for me. I've actually been on sabbatical for that long, and I was looking forward to getting back. Quite frankly, it gets a little boring being on vacation when your work is your whole life. But I did manage to do some fun stuff, and I'll share all of that next week when I'm back with my colleagues, because as you probably notice right now, I'm flying solo once again, no co-pilot, no co-host, but Rebecca and Brian will be back with us for episode 148. Now, before we meet this week's seller, we do have some eBay news that I want to share. First up, if you haven't heard already, registration for eBay Open 2021 is, well, open. Join thousands of sellers like yourself for content and sessions that, quite frankly, you're not going to find anywhere else. And all of it is designed to help you grow your business and deepen your community connections with other sellers. That's always been a very important part of eBay. And this year, the event is online only, not unexpectedly, with the hope that maybe next year we can go back to those wonderful live, in-the-flesh, face-to-face events in 2022. Now, this event will feature lots of stuff. Some of it is familiar to you. There'll be starter and next-level training sessions for new and experienced sellers. One of the more favorite segments of any of our eBay Open events is seller-led breakouts. And I got to tell you, I just reviewed a photo presentation that a guy named Philip Jackson is going to give, and I was so jealous because it's a really good presentation. There's stuff in it that I never thought of using in my presentations. So it gets the seal of approval from me, but there'll be tons of presentations like that. Of course, as always, executive keynotes where you can get things like company updates, insights, and announcements straight from eBay leaders, category breakouts, seller panels made up of sellers just like yourself, lots of community network that's an even bigger part of the event when we're online, special podcast recordings, yes, I'll be there, and just like we had vendor floors where you'd have different booths where you could talk directly with people like who manage different features and tools at eBay, we'll have those in a virtual environment where you can get your questions answered and you can talk directly with the people who provide services and build products for you. It's going to be a great event, and you can register for the 3.5-day event at www.ebay.com/open. And I hope to see you there. Again, it's free. It's open to everyone. I encourage you to register. In the eBay seller product news, there were some developments while we were away. And the one that caught my eye is the one we're going to talk about now. All Seller Hub users now have two new features available. There's one called Year-to-Date Sales View, or This Year, and you can see it in the Sales Summary module on both Seller Hub Overview tab and on the Seller Hub Performance Summary page, and you can filter it. If you use the drop-down menu, you'll see there's now a feature called This Year, and there's also a feature called Last Year, and both of these allow you to see how you're doing as opposed to last year for this year to date, and then last year's sale trends, and you can make comparisons. One of the cool things is you can see how many sales came from best offer, from promoted listings, from seller-initiated offers, so you can see how successful those tools and features are working for you. I actually saw that out of all my sales for the last year, I made one sale by promoted listing, and I don't use it that often, but I thought maybe I'd make more, but that's okay. I'll readjust my promoted listing strategy to see if I can get more exposure that way. The ability to see these yearly trends, like the year-to-date and last year, these have been some of the top asks from you for the past couple of years. And I have to tell you, on behalf of the team, they are so happy that they were able to finally provide these new features to help you better manage and grow your businesses. So do check them out if you haven't noticed them. We'll have more product news in the coming weeks ahead. But for now, that's all the news we have this week, and it's time to meet with this week's seller guest. My next guest has been on eBay for over 20 years. He sells under the eBay store name Clock Watches Parts Plus Steam Pug. He's also one of this year's recipients of the Up and Running Grant. Jim Rodman, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Tell us what it is that you, I think we know from the store title, but what do you sell on eBay? And when exactly did you start selling?
Well, I started selling in 1998. eBay was a new thing and wanted to try it out. And we sold watches mainly and clocks back then. And of course, back then it was all auctions. So we ran auctions and it was fun. Then my wife got a big promotion. And we always made the agreement that we'd always followed her career. And with eBay right there, we ended up closing our clock store in Muncie, Pennsylvania, and moving to Morgantown, West Virginia, 9 moves later. And she retired, and we've now settled in Nazareth, Pennsylvania.
So before you actually started selling on eBay in 1998, you had a brick and mortar clock shop. How long had you been doing that? How did you get into clocks?
Well, actually, and again, I have to credit my wife with this. We were stationed in New Jersey with her job, and she met a master clockmaker, and I apprenticed under him for 4 years. Then as soon as we were done in New Jersey, we moved to central Pennsylvania, where I opened my clock shop, and we started having children, and we had 2 little boys, which are now big boys. And one of them, my oldest, is going to be taking over the business one of these days, as soon as I let go of my grip. So it's been a love story, really, because we decided to up and close the clock shop mainly because of eBay, because we were able to supplement the income that way. And it was always going to be my turn once she retired. And she retired in the end of 2015. And we've been going crazy ever since, growing tremendously when we knew we didn't have to move again. You know, that's the biggest thing that happened.
I know that there are always trends. One of the ones that I know about personally as an old antique dealer is that it's really hard to sell brown furniture when 20, 30 years ago, it wasn't that difficult. What's the clock business like on eBay? How has it been affected, for example, in the last year or the last 10 years?
We're in the clock and watch business, and the watch business has gotten to the point where it's very hard for us to get inventory because it's exploding. I mean, literally exploding. The clock industry, it's very good for us as far as we mainly sell to people that are working on their clocks. They need parts. We are one of the larger providers of antique watch and clock parts on the internet. So with our only real forum being eBay, which keeps us so busy, we can't do anything else. But the trends that I've seen, I'm a member of an organization called the National Watch and Clock Collectors Association, NAWCC. And when I first joined back in the 80s, there was 56,000 members worldwide. And now there's less than 13,000 worldwide. It is a dying art. And the biggest thing that I'm going after is to getting young people involved. So I teach for free. If somebody wants to learn how to repair a clock or do bushings, and the people technical will know what I'm talking about. We do Sunday kind of meetups here, where people that I'm teaching, people that just want to talk clocks and stuff like that. And now we bought this building here and we're putting the clock shop in, so we'll have a lot more room for it. So it's a lot of fun. But the industry itself, well, I believe Rolex has 6 watchmaking schools in the United States. So it's underground, but it's very vibrant as far as the watch side goes.
What about supply chains in general, especially during the last year? Did you notice a disruption in your ability to get supplies? Did it matter? Were you already pretty supplied?
During COVID, we bought a watch shop and 2 clock shops, and the last one being in Syracuse, New York in September. And it was so packed. It took us a month to move the stuff out. And that was a bunch of 26-foot trucks, trailers, and like a 7-person team.
You have no problem with supply right now.
No. And we're kind of oversupplied right now. Our thing is that we want to buy these stores, in particular this one in Syracuse, because the foreclosure company was about ready to put it all in the landfill. And this stuff isn't being made anymore. So we wanted to get it. And, and it worked out well. They were really happy. And of course, we were very tired, but happy. And we had to rent another warehouse just to put the stuff in.
We're talking semi-trailer loads of stuff. Where did you put it all?
Well, we've had a 3,000-square-foot warehouse for years that's packed. So we rented another 1,400 square feet, and we packed it into there. And if you ever go into my YouTube channel, JR Clocker, most people on eBay know me as JR Clocker. And I've had that since I started on eBay, and it's always been the same, and it's kind of been branded now in the very small community of clocks and watches. But I tell you a quick story. I was at an auction in way down south West Virginia, and I'm standing there, and the guy was saying, "So you sell on eBay?" I said, "Yeah." And he goes, "What's your username?" And so I took a pencil and I just wrote it on a piece of paper. He goes, "Oh, I buy from you all the time." But I didn't want to say it out loud because there's too many other people there. And so I just wrote it down. He goes, "Oh, yeah, yeah."
There is the power of branding.
It is. And, you know, people have said, "Oh, you should change your name." Now I like JR Clocker has just been that way. And there's a whole story behind it and the name and why it was. And it all has to do with the internet and a group that I was in early on before Facebook had groups or anything like that. But anyway.
When you first started using the internet, I assume it was before eBay. What parts of the internet did you use for your business, if any?
It was all the dream of having your own website. And, oh my goodness, you're going to master the world. And then this little thing called eBay comes along and is like, I don't have to do that. And it was amazing through the time to listen to people go, "Well, yeah, but I'm going to start a website." And I try to tell them, "Nah, maybe that's time well spent writing listings." That's what I tell people, you know, stop complaining, write a listing.
I think back then you were right. I think today it's a little bit easier to be multi-channel. A lot of sellers are, and a lot of sellers aren't. They're happy to focus on one platform like eBay.
I worked with Etsy, and when Etsy first started, and I had a ton of sales, and it was great. But then it's just so hard when you're by yourself in your basement trying to run both platforms. Now I have employees, but now eBay is a lot bigger part of my, you know. I remember I have people I teach now and they go, "I had 50 listings up and now I only have 45. I'm like, "Well, that's a good thing." "No, I want to go over 50. But every time I get up to 50, I sell something." I'm like, "That's not a bad thing."
Yeah, don't complain.
But, you know, you learn different hacks over the years and how to get stuff listed. I use a listing software called 6bit.
Oh, 6bit, sure. Great software.
eBay used to own it. Yeah, I know. John lives about 2 hours away from me.
We haven't had John Slocum on for a while. I should ask if he'll come back on the podcast. He's the guy who's started the 6bit software, yeah?
Yeah, he lives about 2 hours from me, right on the border of Pennsylvania and New York. And they have actually 5-inch floppies, but I have the original CD for their program, auction assistant.
They have it on 5-inch floppies? Those would be collectible right now.
I know. They have it framed. But the thing is that I joined Auction Assistant in 1999. Then it went to Blackthorn when eBay owned it, and then it spun back out as 6bit. And it's just one of the biggest hacks that I do is using that software, because when I have slight variations of the same part that I just bought in September, but the last time I had it was 2 years ago, it's so easy to rewrite the ad and just tweak it and boom, it's up.
I'm going to put a link to the 6bit software site so anyone who's listening can check it out. And it'll be in the transcript for episode 147. Jim, another part of your business, which it really intrigued me when I saw your store name, is, yeah, okay, we get the clock and watches part. Tell us about the steampunk side of it.
We get a lot of what we call debris. Because unfortunately, and as I age, I keep telling my son, if I do this, just shoot me. As clocksmiths, both men and women, get older, they start taking things apart, not knowing how to put them back together, and they just get piles and piles of parts. Well, steampunk artists, they buy groups of these parts, and they make the greatest little animals and all kinds of really cool things. So I wanted to incorporate that name to drag people over and take a look. And I do. I sell a lot of it to artists, and I really focus on trying to. A lot of people get upset in my business that I do that, but the stuff I'm selling, it's piles of stuff that, you know, you'd get 5 minutes into and go, "No, I'm not going to try to figure out what part." You know, it's not like it's a big wheel off of a truck.
Yeah, of course. Just finding where it belongs would take you a lifetime.
Yeah, you know, and you get buckets of it. And they always have their favorite chair that they take these things apart. So if I find something that is worth looking for the parts, the old clock guys, I'll tell my son, look around that chair right there, because it looks like that was a chair they like to take things apart. And so the part that we need for that very rare clock may be laying there on the floor, you know.
That's interesting.
You know, and I literally told him, I said, just, you know, double tap me.
You know, the minute you said that, I started looking around the floor around my chair hissing, what debris have I dropped?
And all through this too, you know, you said you're an antique dealer, and I was doing all the high-end antique shows out here, and we were doing clocks, but we were doing antique furniture and everything. And you're right, brown furniture is starting to come about back a little bit, but it really got hit after 9/11.
It did, didn't it? And it seems like the, you know, younger people who wanted to collect started focusing on things that we used to throw away, mostly mid-century modern.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That stuff in the landfill.
And fortunately, being out here, there's a lot of people from the Antique Roadshow that, you know, would do the shows. And so I got to know them. And, you know, if we got something special, they'd run over to see it and all that stuff. But that's like a whole world away. And that was another thing. When things got bad, I'm like, you know, eBay was there. eBay was always there. And we lived in an apartment in New York City. After 9/11, we got moved there. And I could run eBay out of the apartment as long as I had good internet signal.
Besides everything else we talked about, you were also one of the winner recipients of the Up and Running grant this year from eBay. Why did you apply? And when you found out you were actually one of the recipients, what was your reaction?
Okay, reaction. I think I shed a couple tears.
Tears?
Yeah, because, you know, you've been doing this for a long time. And when you get a grant like that, it's like a nice pat on the back. I mean, it's a great program. And I think there's a lot of people out there that probably deserved it more than me. I don't know. I'm pretty modest in that way. And I just think that it was an honor. And when something's unexpected, I was like, I forget the person that actually called me to tell me, but it was like, I was almost speechless. If anybody's out there listening and if they do it again.
And we will.
Apply. Don't think that, oh no, I won't get it, because that's what I thought, but I actually applied. And we remember the day we applied, December 11th, 2020. That's the day we applied. And then everything that's happened since, including today, they did the little video thing for me. And I'm like, okay, well, all right, let's move on. Wait for that to come out. And then I get an email from you. I'm like, oh my God, I'm like a bad penny.
No, not at all. I'm always so relieved and pleased when someone agrees to be a guest on our podcast. I'm always looking for interesting sellers to tell their stories. And it's not as easy as you might think. I think people are either intimidated or they're shy or they'd rather not. So I'm always appreciative when we have a seller who's willing to help other sellers by sharing their story.
Right. And I will go on to tell my Facebook groups and stuff like that they should not ignore the opportunity. There's some very interesting sellers out there. You know, and they all have their unique story. I know you probably know Spencer.
Oh, Spencer Applin, yes.
Yeah.
He's been on our podcast. He's a wonderful guest.
Yeah. He was part of the eBay school. Like, you know how many people don't know about eBay school?
Yeah, it's a new thing. So we're getting the word out as much.
Oh, my goodness. The best thing you can do for your business is to read what eBay is suggesting that you should do to get your product out to more people. I get so much pushback on people not putting stuff on white backgrounds. And my stuff always ranks higher. And the only time it doesn't rank higher is it was an old ad that had a gray background or something like that. They always rank higher. Always, always, always. And that's what you want to be. You want to be, you know, ranked the highest that you can be.
I've just had a very long discussion on our Facebook group about how you show up in Google Shopping. And there are some mm-hmm. sellers who are just, well, they believe it's an eBay thing, that if their item doesn't show up on Google Shopping, that eBay is blocking it. Google Shopping is not eBay. We don't have any control over it. But we do provide suggestions and tips for your listings so that they'll show up in Google Shopping.
From what I heard is, the white background is something that Google and eBay work together on to get eBay sellers higher ranked on Google Shopping.
Well, Jim, that's actually not entirely true. But Google and eBay have never worked together on this issue. Google Shopping has always preferred a white background. They will show images without a white background, but it's when there's really no one else is listing that item. But if you're in a competitive field at all, you do yourself a terrible disadvantage by not using a white background for at least your first photo.
First photo.
Jim, getting back to what we were talking about before, you've been selling on eBay for a long, long time. How did you get started in business? And did you have a job before you decided to run your own business?
Getting back to a little bit about how I got started and why I got started is I had decided a long, long time ago that I didn't want to work for somebody. I would do anything to get to that point. But once I got to the point, I didn't want to work for anybody anymore. And there's a famous story running around about me. At one time, I artificially inseminated turkeys.
Okay, I'm all ears.
It was in Rochester, Minnesota. We were stationed there. And friends of ours said, hey, this is what we do. Do you want to come out and do it? And I'm like, sure, I'll try anything. Well, I went out and did it. And then we were at an important meeting with a regional, my wife worked for the Department of Justice. Anyway, so a big, big regional meeting and the regional director's there and it's executive staff and spouses. And he looks around the room and says, spouses, who's here has had the weirdest job in your moves around the country? And I raised my hand and my wife kicked me under the table. And the guy next to me who knew me, who's another executive staff member, just started laughing. He goes, Jim's the funniest guy in the world. This story is going to be great. And so I told him that I artificially inseminated turkeys. And he said, is that a thing? I said, yeah, it's a thing. I said, we put them on a ramp. They come up the ramp. You grab them. You put their legs in little stirrups. And you...
Okay, go on. I'm not going to interrupt. Go ahead.
And you take a little tube of the main ingredient and you put it inside and it comes out like a sieve, whatever. And you take them out of the stirrups, put them on the line, pat them in the butt, give them a cigarette and send them down the road.
And then the turkey says, you never call, you never write.
Oh, I got to add that. People ask me to recite it at different events and stuff. But anyway,
do the turkeys ever make eyes at you? Do they ever look and go gobble, gobble?
Oh, yeah, I tell you what, I learned so much about turkeys. They can actually throw their feathers at you. They can throw a dart at you. And you can't leave them outside in the rain or they'll drown.
Yeah, I've heard that one. Yeah.
These are domestic turkeys. Yeah. To finish the story, a couple years later, we're at a big retirement party in Philadelphia. And it's been a couple years. And this regional director is now the presidential appointee director. And he's walking across this big ballroom dance floor with his entourage. And I'm walking by myself. Doo-doo-doo-doo-doo. And he goes, Jim. I said, hi, sir. How are you? And he goes, how's the turkey business? And it was like January 3rd or 4th, right? And I said, well, what do you have for Christmas? So he goes, turkey. I said, it's doing real good.
Yeah, as long as the product was tasty, how it got there is no concern. Exactly.
But no, they raise these turkeys for eggs. And so we have to inseminate them to make that process start.
Productivity is important.
Yeah. There's 5,000 birds a day you did. Oh, one more. You picked me up in a white panel van with seats inside. And so you drive out and you're driving like an hour and a half. So afterwards, I said to him, I said, why do you pick everybody up? Because it's a big crew that goes out there. He goes, well, before when I didn't pick them up, they'd just leave.
If they had a car in the parking lot. Yeah, I didn't sign up for
this.
They
would just leave. Because it is stinky, smelly.
It's where the word foul comes from.
Anyway, but no, so you do anything you can do. I waited tables. I did all kinds of things. And then 4 years as an apprentice, because that's where really my passion came. Sometimes you fall into it and sometimes, you plan it from early childhood. But this one I fell into in my 20s. And I was doing antiques and different things like that. And I thought I was, but clocks just, it, I got hooked. And I've been there ever since. But that's a long answer to that question.
It was a very interesting answer. I now know a little bit more about turkeys than I probably ever wanted to. So.
Yeah. I didn't need to know that.
I knew someone years ago who was in the job of doing something like that with rabbits, but it wasn't really inseminating. Oh, it was the collection end of it.
Oh, yeah.
He would tell the story and be very matter of fact, but people would just, their jaws would drop because his job was actually... And I'm not going to describe it. You can use when you'd say, what do you do? He'd say, well, I do X. And yeah. Well, you do what? You never can underestimate the power of a good job. So,
well, yeah, artificially inseminating turkeys was the best way I could come up with it.
There's more colloquial ways of putting it.
The looks I get, well, it was kind of like the look you did what? You know, fortunately, I found something that you love. But I tell people that I'm talking to on eBay, it's like there's a million people selling iPhone 10s or whatever. Find your lane. Find something that you can be an expert in.
Find your lane.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, I use lane, category, whatever you want to do. But you got to decide what you want to do. Do you want to sell jeans for a living, or do you want to sell something that will give you the satisfaction that you're running your own business?
Jim, what eBay tools or features do you use as a seller to help boost your business on eBay?
You know, I mean, eBay just gives us the tools to do whatever we want. And I use the offer system right along with markdowns. I have my whole store in markdown now, but anybody that likes my stuff that gets into the offer category, I send them another email and say, hey, look, 10% off the whole store. I'm going to give you another 10% off, but it's kind of limited, and I'm giving it to three other buyers at the same time. So, you know, if you're interested, jump in. And the other thing I would say to people is watch your margins. Margins are so important when you're reselling, you're thrifting, whatever. You still got to remember that you have to sell for a profit. Otherwise, you're just spinning your wheels and it's a hobby. If you really want to make this happen, the biggest thing I learned was going for the margin. Not trying to sell it for more money than it's worth. Trying to buy it so you can sell it for the proper margin.
And that means negotiating sometimes if you have to.
Yeah. And it means, again, finding your own way to find the products that you need. If you are a Snap-on tool seller on eBay, I'd be looking for auctions for, you know, mechanics shops that are going out of business. And I would get there and be prepared to buy it all. And one trick I'll tell you, when you buy more, your margin lowers because there's going to be stuff that you can buy, you know, cheap in box lots that, you know, you'll spend $10 on and you'll be able to make $1,000 on that. We try to run on well, maybe this isn't the place to talk about what my margin run.
You don't have to get into specifics, of course.
Yeah. But we run, let's look at it this way. 3 times your money is not a good margin when your supply is thin. You know, you're trying to look for that Air Jordan, you know, that's once in a while home run. But then when you go, I need to find one because they sell so great, you're going to overpay. And as soon as you overpay, you're dropping your margins and it's going down the drain.
Good point.
Sorry.
Yeah. You know, that's a good point. Yeah.
And that's the biggest thing that I learned. We do a lot of auctions in that. And when my son, Jeff, he was 11, he started going to auctions with me. And he'd keep a little clipboard and he'd put little pluses and minuses on it. We call it push. And that means if I have something that I could buy, let's go back into brown furniture. And let's say there was a really nice mid-century chest. And I said, yeah, I can afford to pay $100 for that. And I only had to pay 10. It got 10 push points, meaning I can turn around and spend more on something else and then push the money back and forth between the items. And that's what we do.
You aggregate, not to focus so much on just single items.
Correct. Everything that you're going to buy. He was 11 sitting in the back of an auction and a lady came up, by the way, a steampunk lady came up and sat next to him. And there was a lot of watch and clock parts there. And she looked at him and said, as he's organizing stuff, and she said, is your dad going to buy everything? And Jeff turned to her and said, I think so.
There's psychology behind that, right?
The big thing is that's just pure innocence in his part. He's 11-year-old. You just so a grown-up asked him a question. He answered it. And always wait till the end of the auction because the stuff really falls through the cracks at the end of the auction. So
we used to do that a lot when we were in the business, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Now, do you still sell?
I sell, but I don't buy for reselling anymore. I have a garage full of resale items that we refer to as death piles.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I actually have a death warehouse, so I have to go through that. But I'm also selling off my collections of things like cameras and ephemera and little unusual object dart that I've collected over the years, mostly from eBay, so that when it's time to move to someplace like a nursing home, I don't have to worry about dragging this stuff to a thrift store or putting it out on the lawn. it's all gone by then. You have to think ahead, just like you have to think in business.
Right? Yeah. So. I mean, back in the early 90s and that, we would be at auction at the East Coast, and we were filling train cars full of antiques and new stuff, too. And we were getting auctioneers in California to buy it while it was on the car. We'd send him a manifest, and he'd buy it. And it's kind of like what's going on today when you're buying pallets. But this was going to high-end auctions, and we said, you know, a lot of stuff isn't antiques. He goes, they will be by the time they get to California.
Oh, brother.
Oh, dear. It, meaning it's going to – the train takes so long to get there.
Oh, of course. That's the reason. It's not that anyone's going to, like, sell them they are.
No. And it was funny because when eBay first started, the auctioneers in California loved it. The auctioneers in the East Coast hated it.
Yeah, they did.
But now they've all embraced it. Just like I tell people, you're going to have a bad month on eBay, but you got to figure out why. And almost all the time, it's my fault. So eBay is just a platform to sell.
Jim, I want to get back to your Up and Running Grant Award that you received. Each recipient of the award received $10,000. Did you use the award money for your business?
Oh, we do nothing but business. I don't know. I guess to me, I would feel uncomfortable if I used it for anything other than business. Parts of it we use for the new clock shop and that, and some advertisement, and yeah, mainly inventory stuff. And it's nice to have that cushion. And if I can recommend anybody, you know, we had a cushion and we've just made it larger. But these things, when you get to buy right, takes a lot of cash.
Yeah, you can.
And to have that, it's just a big help. But the last thing I got to say is, because of the grant, they wanted us to go through eBay school. And at first I thought, oh, something normally people have to pay for. But no, it's free.
Yeah, it's free.
Take advantage of it. Go through it all the way. Don't do it halfway. Put headphones on so you can focus more. But listen to what they're saying, because they're not trying to make you a bad seller. They're trying to make you a good seller. Or a better seller is probably a better way to put it.
More successful.
More successful. Because you got to remember, the more successful you are, the more successful eBay is.
Well, Jim, again, thank you so much for taking time out of your day to talk to us. We really appreciate it.
All righty. Thank you, Griff.
Jim Rodman has sold on eBay for over 20 years. He sells under the eBay store name Clock Watches Parts Plus Steampunk, and we'll put the link to his store in the episode 147 transcript. While we've been away, we received a lot of seller questions. My inbox is overflowing, and we won't cover any questions this week. I hate answering them alone. I really enjoy answering questions both with Brian and Rebecca. I think it's a lot more interesting. Plus, if I get something wrong, they're the first to correct me, so that's important. So we'll resume answering them on our next episode, which is episode number 148. In the meantime, please, you can always send in your selling or business questions for us by either calling it into our voice line at 888-723-4630, and we do love the voice line, or you can email us at podcast@ebay.com. Remember that we're always happy to answer questions. We cannot answer questions that are account nature, so if you have a question that's specific to your account, a public podcast is probably not the best place to discuss it. But general questions about most anything to do with selling on eBay, we're happy to try to answer. Now, I'd like to thank again our guest this week, Jim Rodman. Next week, we'll chat with author and spokesperson Marcia Collier about a wide range of seller topics with a focus on social media, which is her expertise area. Make sure to listen in next Tuesday. The eBay for Business podcast is produced and distributed by Libsyn and Podcast 411.